across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Welcome back, 7:06 on this Monday morning, March 25th. Nice to have you along, live from Lake Wissota. We've got our Ride into Spring contest coming up in just a sec here, along with meteorologist Brittany Merlot. And we've got also coming up our friends from Motherhood for Good are going to talk about the importance of next week's school board races. Before we get to Brittany and the snowfall, let's do our Ride into Spring contest. That's the one where you take that Civic Media app that you've downloaded onto your phone. You have downloaded the Civic Media app to your phone, right? And then call up any one of the radio stations on there. And then look for the little text button where you can text the radio station. And all you got to do is hit that text button and text today's keyword. Actually, it's this hour's keyword because there's different ones four times a day. And the keyword for this hour is vacation. You just text the word vacation using the Civic Media app. And there are four daily winners, one each contest hour, that will receive an overnight getaway to Chula Vista Resort in Wisconsin Dells. All entrants are entered to win one of the grand prizes. They include everything from a 3-in-1 blender to new bicycles, outdoor patio furniture, all of that and more. All you got to do is be listening at 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 3 p.m. for your next keyword and your next chance to win. All right, it's time for the weather, which is normally when we bring in Brittany Merlot. Well, actually, we will. And normally, we would pass along a comment from Rob in Tigerton. And he does have one here. He says, it's 31 with some light rain. We got 7 inches of wet, heavy snow. Brittany was right on the money. He says, I was up at midnight plowing snow. It was really wet, heavy snow, hard to move. But, Rob, we got to take issue because the official weather spotter report for Tigerton was actually 12 inches with 13 nearby in Burnham Wood, 10 here in Chippewa Falls, as well as Eau Claire and Menominee. So Highway 29 and a little bit north, Brittany, we're the ones that got womp this time.
Yes, finally. I am just happy. I'm so happy. I feel like a little kid at Christmas.
Finally you got womped, Pat.
Brittany, yeah! Brittany, how are you?
I'm stoked.
People got a foot of snow.
Yes, yes, yes. And Wausau was one of those areas too. Our reports are coming in anywhere from 11 inches to 11.6. That's basically a foot of snowfall. And now everything's going to be changing as we go through the day. In fact, temperatures throughout the state, especially the southern half, already above freezing and continuing to rise. So statewide, we'll all climb above freezing today. And that means as this storm system, the low pressure hasn't even hit us yet. It is still sitting in Nebraska. So as it gets closer, those winds are going to start to increase today. We could see gusts up to 40 miles per hour off of Lake Michigan and rain rolling in. It's going to start off light throughout the afternoon, but as we go into this evening and overnight, we could see accumulations of rain ramping up to nearly a half an inch to an inch throughout tonight and then into tomorrow as well. So the system still has a little bit of kick with it and a little bit of snow as it exits on Tuesday morning and also into Wednesday as well. But right now we're warming up and rain. So it's going to be a slushy, sloppy, nasty mess along Highway 29 and north in the next 24 hours.
Yes, it is. And especially even for those of us who might not necessarily want to attack our driveway and go, you know, it's going to melt, it's going to rain, all that stuff. You get all that extra stuff that the snowplow brings by, you know, and dumps right at the edge of your driveway, which is also where our garbage cans go on Monday mornings here in this neighborhood. And a neighbor just sent me a text a little bit ago. Looks like the plow really got your garbage can good. Ooh. And I wrote back, I haven't put my trash out yet. So that just tells you somebody down the street from me really got their garbage can whomped. And so we're gonna have a little cleanup to do on 93rd Avenue here, I sense. But, you know, we just ride. We roll with it. We roll with the seasons.
It was really hard for me, too. When I woke up in Kenosha, like, I looked out my window, and by the time I walked downstairs to start doing any shoveling, the snow had melted. And I'm just telling you right now, what an inconvenience. So much winter.
Hey, no.
An inconvenience.
Yeah.
Inconvenience.
But, like I said, it's time-released rain. You know, it's a couple of inches of rain that we really needed, and it's just going to, it's all going to be absorbed. And before long, the grass will be green again.
Exactly. That's exactly what it's
doing. And I can say that because the baseball season opens today, or opens this week. You know, the Brewers on Thursday. So we got that going for us.
That's exciting. All
right, Brittany, thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. At 7-Eleven right now, I was mentioning and didn't have quite enough time in the history lesson. So I want to talk for just a moment to wish happy birthday to Milwaukee's own Jim Lovell, the astronaut from Apollo 8, the commander of the ill-fated Apollo 13. There it is. Turns 96 today. It's from the soundtrack for Apollo 13. He was the one who uttered the famous line, "Houston, we've had a problem." The landmark movie about the mission was actually based on his memoir about the flight, with Tom Hanks playing Lovell. On Christmas of 1968, going back a few years to Apollo 8, Lovell and two other astronauts took turns reading from Genesis as a worldwide audience watched humans travel to the moon for the very first time. Lovell is the only astronaut to make two lunar trips without ever setting foot on the moon. He met his wife Marilyn while they were attending Milwaukee's Juno High School, when he was enamored with rockets even in high school. Marilyn passed away about 6 months ago after 71 years of marriage. And so we just wanted to again wish happy birthday to Captain Jim Lovell, who turns 96 years old today and has done Wisconsin proud in so many ways. So thank you again for your service. All right, what else do we have here? Coming up, our friends from Motherhood for Good will be talking about school board elections. And they've become rather disruptive affairs, especially since COVID, when disruption seems to be the name of the game for far-right conservatives who, again, when something happens that they don't like, rather than necessarily seeking to change things by running for office or trying to convince the public of their view, will become disruptive. And that's going to happen again this week in another area dealing with the 2020 elections in Manitowoc this Wednesday. And that's because the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, Megan Wolf, is going to be making an appearance at the Manitowoc Public Library. It's an event sponsored by the Manitowoc Public Library and the League of Women Voters of Manitowoc County. Her presentation is titled, "You Can Trust Wisconsin's Election System." Because you can. Wisconsin elections have been accurate and fair and safe. They always have been, always will be, thanks to more than 1,800 municipal officials who take pride in what they do. But that small but noisy contingent of people who are willing to go along with Donald Trump's plans to, you know, overthrow and overturn an American election have already put out across the internet that they're going to show up and disrupt this event. It's again this Wednesday, 6 p.m. at the Manitowoc Public Library. And a group called the Northeast Wisconsin Patriots has been putting up emails or website posts saying, "We encourage all patriots to attend and resolutely protest Wolf's claim that our election system is secure." Their note goes on to talk about the ways that they want Megan Wolf impeached, not praised, for her maladministration of the state's election. "The March 27th meeting gives us an opportunity to insist that she defend herself." Well, no, she's not on trial. She's not on trial, and you're not the prosecution. You're not at all. And I really would double check whether you should be putting the word patriots in your name if this is what you stand for, is overturning a free and fair election. But I did want it out there, not to cause trouble in Manitowoc. That's what they're looking to do, is cause trouble. And there are people that have already seen this notice. There's people who are already going to be there to attend a presentation about a nationally recognized public official. And, you know, so perhaps at some point these folks will understand that this kind of disruption is not going to do anything to win over people to their cause, because their cause is rooted in a lie. It's rooted in Donald Trump's big lie. And I would urge them resolutely not to bother with what they think that they're going to be doing on Wednesday. From the text line, we have somebody writing in about HSHS closing the hospitals in Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls. And they say, what did they do with the money that Governor Evers okayed for the hospitals to use a month ago? Thank you for the text. The answer to that is that that $15 million is still in limbo because, again, Governor Evers signed a bill to reallocate $15 million for the Chippewa Valley Health Care. The line item vetoes give more flexibility for how the money can be used in the Chippewa Valley rather than just using it for bricks and mortar, emergency room type services, which is what the money was initially earmarked for. Well, if you keep it that way, you probably can't put the money to use. But this way, you can find ways to put it to use to keep some healthcare providers, you know, physicians, others in the area as a bit of a transition until things settle down in the marketplace, maybe other players move in. But Republican legislators, again, looking for any excuse to themselves be disruptive when it comes to Governor Evers, have decided that they're not going to release the money now. They claim that, well, now this means the money can be sent out of the Chippewa Valley. It's a slush fund and it can be used anywhere. Look, just because that's what you guys might do with the money doesn't mean that that's what the good people in the Chippewa Valley want to do. They're hurting right now. Their healthcare system has been dealt a body blow. And the last thing that they need right now are Republican legislators, especially from the Chippewa Valley area, much less the rest of the Republican leadership, playing politics with this extremely important issue. Now, the legislature is not coming back into session, but that's not necessary. The Joint Finance Committee can meet and release the funds, and that's exactly what they ought to be doing, is coming to the aid of the Chippewa Valley. Think about if it was in your region instead, whatever your region is, the Fox Valley or the Driftless region, wherever, and give those folks the tools that they need and set the partisan games aside for another day. All right, if you missed it over the weekend, of course, the Badger men's basketball team lost to James Madison on Friday, losing to a 12 seed. Marquette, meanwhile, won its two games over the weekend, defeating 10 seed Colorado, 81-77. Next in the Sweet 16, they will play 11 seed North Carolina State. The Badger women's hockey team fell short in the title game, 1-0 to Ohio State. The Badger men's hockey team, their NCAA tournament action opens this Friday afternoon in Providence, Rhode Island against Quinnipiac. And the Bucks won yesterday against Oklahoma City. They will play the Lakers at home tomorrow night. Selena Heller is coming up next, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Monday morning. When you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Back now on Up North News, 7:20 on this Monday morning, and we're joined by Up North News reporter Selena Heller, who joins us weekly to talk about some of the stories that she'll be working on or have been working on for the past week or so. Selena, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. We're going to start by talking about National Agriculture Day, which was last week. And if people are going, wait, I thought we did this in October. That was National Farmer Day.
Totally different.
Not totally different, but one's for the farmer and agriculture is for like everybody, right?
You have to include the haulers and processors and any job related to farming. I have one in nine jobs in this state are part of this industry. So it's big. Wow. And Wisconsin agriculture contributes $104 billion to the state's economy every year.
$104 billion.
Yeah, so we're very much in the game here in Wisconsin.
Right. And so, you know, Bakken is so much more. And yet it also includes, you know, those farm families. And I know that there's sometimes a tradition in some rural school districts. I don't know that it always happens on National Ag Day, but, you know, the parking lots look a little different in the high schools in some places.
Well, right. In my hometown of Black River Falls, there were a lot of tractors in the parking lot at the high school because it was Take Your Tractor tractor to work day to work.
Take your tractor to work day.
Take your tractor to school day. I think we should take tractors to work too.
Hey, what if, you know, there's days when I could just hop on my little John Deere mower and just get, you know, take a few minutes and just get some peacefulness. Nobody's ringing up my phone. I'm not answering any emails. It's just me on my little lawn tractor. So why wouldn't a farmer feel the same way? But I've seen that before where, you know, they get like one day a year where they get the okay to take the tractor in, which this time of year is perfect because they haven't started planting yet or anything like that.
Well, yeah, they don't need them. And they drove them in the mornings and some left them there for the whole day and then drove them at the end of the school. They drove them home and then some left at lunch and brought them home then and then drove the car back. And I called the secretary at the school and she's like, oh, yeah, we got tractors here today.
I think that's great. I really do. And, you know, again, anything that lets you show off a little pride and lets you kind of, you know, let your hair down a little bit and not have to drive the same old, you know, beat up used car that most 16-year-olds get, you know, if you get a chance to use the tractor, hey, all the better.
Well, for sure. But I don't know. There's a lot of nice cars in the high school parking lots these days.
Yeah, I'll bet you there's not a 73 Plymouth Fury in there like there was. What was your first car?
Plymouth Reliant, a little black one.
Wow, the Reliant.
Reliant. Kicking
it old school. Good for you. Yeah. How many miles did that have when it finally pooped out?
Not too many because my parents were under, you know, now you can just drive cars forever and ever and it doesn't matter, you know, the mileage as much, but they were like, if it has 80,000 miles on it, then you get a different one because that's too many. So they're kind of just old school. Like that's a lot.
That's okay. So, you still got good trading value. So I suppose that's a very good thing. So, all right. Good job, folks. All right. Another story that you've been working on, a much more serious note, and it's all because of that Alabama Supreme Court decision that really has a lot of people worried about the future of in vitro fertilization. And again, Alabama's a long way from Wisconsin, but the ripple effects are being felt all across the nation for parent people who want to be parents, doctors, providers, all kinds of folks are still really feeling this, aren't they?
Well, right. And the doctor I talked to, she's the founder and she's been practicing there for 26 years in fertility. She's the founder of the Wisconsin Fertility Institute in Middleton. And she said the phone has been ringing off the hook. People have been worried. She's been concerned, like, is this going to spread? Are other states going to be involved in all of this? Is Wisconsin going to be? So they're taking measures with embryos right now. And it's just they're kind of up in a frenzy about what is going to happen too, what this all means for the future.
That's very unfortunate because there are many embryos really throughout the United States, throughout the world, that should not be transferred, that may carry genetic abnormalities that, you know, there are maybe families that don't want to transfer these embryos. And we worry that if these laws take effect really elsewhere, including in Wisconsin, that some of these families are going to be forced to carry these embryos or make decisions about these embryos that they don't want to be forced to make.
So Dr. Pritz also was talking to me about those embryos that the families have in their offices, and you don't think about the extra cost this would incur also, because she talked about storage fees and in vitro fertilization is already an exorbitant amount of money, but there will be extra fees incurred if you have to store the embryos, there's people involved and there's equipment involved. And so it's just increasing all these amounts, just money-wise, even that you wouldn't think of.
Right. Because again, look what you're talking about. You're talking about frozen storage. Does that really sound like a definition of people to you? It's not. And that's what's making this so complicated for people. And you talked to a mom about the value of in vitro fertilization and what life would be like if that were not available to her.
Right. This mom, Rachel Hahn in Elk Mound, she wouldn't have a family if it weren't for fertility treatments, medical intervention, and IVF. She had a first son with fertility treatments. And then, I mean, this was a years long process, of course, but then two daughters because of IVF.
First of all, it's definitely created a sense of empathy for what a lot of families are going through, struggling to create their family. We don't always know, looking in from the outside, the struggles that they have. I mean, it's a very private thing for a lot of people. We were lucky to have a great support system. We were lucky to be able to pursue an option like IVF. I mean, had we not, we wouldn't have the children that we have. And they are, we're old, and we are so grateful for them. And they have been such a blessing that, like I said, otherwise, had we not done IVF, we wouldn't have them.
So Rachel Hahn, she was diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome or ovary syndrome. And so a lot of infertile women have this syndrome. And so IVF is sometimes the only option. And for this family, it was successful. And of course, like she said, she wouldn't have the beautiful children that she does today. So,
and very again, important. It is a very critical, a very personal health matter to families who were not looking to have this politicized. And yet here we are, because we have to again point out that while there are, from Donald Trump on down, there are Republicans who are saying, oh, but we support IVF. But they've also signed on to pieces of legislation that would bestow personhood upon an embryo. And that leads to all of these complications. I'm sure these folks that you're talking to didn't want politics involved and really don't know who they can trust.
Well, right. The doctor said exactly that. She said, this is no place for politics. This is between the doctor here and families. This is no place. We don't want that. That's not where that belongs.
All right. Selena Heller has that story and more. You can catch it over at upnorthnewswi.com or on our social media feeds, where you can see the full video report of what she puts together. All right, Selena, have a great day. Talk to you next week.
Thank you. You too.
And our friends from Motherhood for Good talking about the importance of next week's school board elections right after this. You're up north. Motherhood Monday. Our friends from Motherhood for Good join us in just a sec. First, a reminder, you can get our daily newsletter over at upnorthnewswi.com. In there is my article on how the state Supreme Court's new progressive majority is reforming how the court does business after 15 years of conservative control. Also, some of Wisconsin's favorite Easter candies that you'll be purchasing this week. And on social media, the Affordable Care Act celebrated its 14th anniversary on Saturday. Read about the ways it has been improving lives over these past 14 years. And we'll talk about brewers, not the baseball team, but the actual people making beer and looking for more locally sourced ingredients for their craft beers. Just head over to our Facebook page for that. All right. On this Motherhood Monday, we have some big elections coming up in Wisconsin a week from tomorrow. So get yourself registered. If you don't know if you're registered or don't know where to go, head over to myvote.wi.gov. And along with two statewide constitutional amendments, which probably should be voted no because they're just monkey business, there's also reason to vote yes for a whole lot of school referendums around the area. But then there's school board elections, and they're not what they used to be. And Danielle Scampini-Lynn joins us along with Sarah Harrison from the Brookfield area to talk a bit about that. Danielle, Sarah, good morning to you.
Morning, Pat.
Good morning.
So I don't know how else to put this other than to say the school board elections have become much more political, almost partisan, certainly very expensive. A lot of outside groups come in. Like it or not, Danielle, this is kind of where we are these days.
I mean, yeah, it cannot be overstated how different it is than when I was a kid. I am in the Elmbrook School District, which you might know is the number one school district in the state. It also happens to be one that is being targeted for kind of flipping to a very political partisan board after, you know, decades of being, you know, run by nonpartisan in a very mixed politically minded district. Kind of the school board has been kind of like hands off until very recently. And, you know, it's kind of like all eyes on Elmbrook in the area right now, which is, you know, something that is very concerning to say the least.
So what is it that we're seeing in these others when we hear that, you know, a local school district has had a conservative takeover? What are the kinds of things that have happened or, you know, were in the works to happen? You know, in other words, people go, what's the big deal? Danielle, what is the big deal?
You know, I actually am going to let Sarah answer that one as a parent of kids who were in a district when mm-hmm. a district was flipped and are still, I think one of your kids is still a student. So can you speak to how, like what you've seen just firsthand experience of how things have changed in your district?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So my kids go to school in the Waukesha School District. And my oldest hasn't graduated. And what we've seen in the last couple of years, we've seen a parental rights a statement that is almost word for word from Moms for Liberty. We've seen books being either banned or moved up to higher level reading areas. We've seen removal of signage from our school deemed as political, and that included safe space signs from our classrooms. We've seen a lot of what I would call culture wars happening in our schools.
And this, again, when we talk about the things that are being taken down, the great irony of all of this is that the things that are meant to say that this is a safe space and that we are an inclusive community, conservatives are claiming that that's divisive, that it's mm-hmm. dividing a community, which is logic I can't really explain, but Sarah, maybe because you've seen some of it firsthand, if you were going to describe, you know, what the tone is that justifies this, I mean, does it make sense?
No, it's not logical to me. What they're trying to say is that that's, of course it's a safe space because every space is safe. And of course, kids are welcome of all different stripes because all people are welcome. It's a very all lives matter kind of vibe that you mm-hmm. get when you talk to these folks.
Yeah, because again, and it doesn't make us the bad guys for saying this, Danielle, but you know, this thought of the universally benevolent parents but much like benevolent employers. Yeah, there's some very good ones out there, but there are kids whose parents are not doing right by them. And frankly, school is the safer space, whether it's for talking, for learning, just for existing, for eating, Danielle.
Yes. Yeah. And that's so true. And it's, you know, there has to be a balance, right? There has to be a balance of course, they're your kids and you have the say on how they are raised, but also they are a member of our community. And it is up to teachers and administrators and other members of the community to make sure that kids are being cared for, are being able to be themselves. And just think about how much development goes into a person's personality, who they're going to be at these stages of life. And if we're saying like, well, everyone is welcome, so we can't talk about anything that's different about anyone because it's going to make someone else feel less welcome, it doesn't make sense. So really all it's going to do is lead to kids feeling like, well, if I'm not supposed to talk about the way that I am because it might make someone else uncomfortable, how does that also mean that I'm welcome just as much as everybody else? It truly just, the logic does not make sense.
And when you talk about development, I mean, I just think of curriculum such as, you know, a healthy human growth and development, you know, AKA sex education curriculum that at one point in Wisconsin, you know, required factual, age-appropriate information. Scott Walker and the Republicans came in and said, nope, you guys don't have to teach sex ed. And if you do, it has to be an abstinence-only, you know, foundation to it. That, Sarah, that's not doing right by anybody, especially, again, people who are wrestling with questions about, you know, about sexuality, about gender, about, you know, the way the world works, and a place of education that has professionals giving age-appropriate education has never struck me as a bad thing.
Well, I agree completely. And one of the things that really drove me to get more involved with the school board, and I actually ran for Waukesha School Board a couple of years back, was that at the time, my 13-year-old stood up in front of the school board in this intimidating environment and said, "You are hurting me as a queer student, and what are you going to do about it?" And they didn't do a darn thing about it. So I needed to help advocate for the kids that didn't have a home that they could go to and to have those conversations.
So when you talk about being an advocate, and obviously there's now the school board races are much more involved, much more expensive. I'm sure, Danielle, that folks in Elmbrook are being bombarded by a group called WISRED and probably others. Can you talk a bit about what this WISRED is and what it is, what kind of tactics they're using in Elmbrook and elsewhere?
Yeah, so WISRED is very directly tied to the Waukesha County Republican Party. But more than that, it is not, you know, what you would say is like your father's Republican Party, as, you know, we've seen a lot in the last decade plus. Very, very far right, very conservative agendas. And they try to kind of paint over it with, oh, well, this is just, you know, just your conservative values at work. And the candidates try to kind of distance themselves, but they're on WISRED mailers that we're seeing coming out that say, you know, support your conservative values, vote for these candidates, you know, and they also tend to not really be super involved members of the existing school communities, which just feels kind of like a bit of a red flag, right? Like, why is this candidate who is being so heavily supported by this group who is not really a very involved member of our community, why do they want to be involved with a school board that they don't have a lot of, you know, personal ties to? They might live in the district, and they might even, you know, send kids to the district, but if they don't take an active role, why is this the role that they're going after? It feels a little concerning to me.
Well, and it's something we've talked about in the past with Tim Nordine, the president of the Eau Claire School Board, and others, who said it really should be a red flag that if somebody is campaigning as kind of a single issue candidate, mm-hmm. like taxes, you know, instead of what our kids are learning, or the, you know, conservative values, what they may lack is the intellectual curiosity to want to look at the whole well-being of the education of our children, Sarah. And single issue candidates are not, like you said, you're not going to do right by the kids if you're not wondering about all the rest of the district, except, you know, making sure that you can ban books.
Right. Agree completely. Well, and we're finding in Waukesha now that we are at a position where we have 8 of our 9 school board members were WISRED type folks. And yeah. So we're trying really hard to get folks back on the board. We have one person, Diane Voigt, who is on the board, who was a former board member. We got her back on the board last year. And this year we have Stephanie Fidlin and we have Angelique Byrne who are running. And we're recommending, you know, vote only for 2, even though you can vote for 3. Please don't vote for any of the WISRED folks, because they're just pushing an agenda. That's all that's happening.
And by the way, we should note that, yeah, school board elections traditionally are individual matters. Like an individual says, I'd like to step up and serve on my school board and vote for me. And the other one says, vote for me. But now we have these tickets, these blocks, you know, these groups. Mm-hmm. And because they're not clearly identified as, you know, Republican or Democratic, it is tougher. Voters in these school districts literally have to do some homework and not just guess at who's the best person on the board. Sarah, are there, is a lot of this being done through like lawn signs? Are there a lot of mailers? I know in some districts they were seeing like bombards of radio ads, which again, most school board candidates can't afford, but outside money can afford.
Right. Where is that money coming from, Pat, to afford?
Right.
We all know that's not cheap.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, that should be a red flag there as well. So, well, let's talk about what people can do then. And Danielle, of course, obviously, you know, at Motherhood for Good, you guys are rooted in getting information out to people. So what is your recommendation for people hearing this in their school districts? They already sense that there's maybe a concerning candidate or a candidate they really want to support. You know, you still got 8 days till the election. What are the kinds of things people can do in their own networks?
You know, that's a great question, Pat. And the thing with local elections is that they are just that. They are local. And that's who you should be talking to. Talk to community members that you trust, who you know either are like-minded or share values, and say, hey, I am not totally tuned in on this election, which is totally fine to be. Don't be embarrassed that you don't really know where to begin. And ask someone if they have any resources, if they have information. It's great to go to a candidate's website. If you can find a candidate out trying to, you know, introduce themselves to the community, that's also a really great way to meet them and ask them questions directly. You know, like you said, we have 8 days. You can early vote all this week, depending on your area. We definitely recommend early absentee voting, especially if you're heading out of town for spring break this week. But before you do that, just, yeah, send a couple texts to friends if you aren't sure, to get some, you know, questions answered. And if you do feel really confident, be proactive and reach out to those friends, because they might be feeling like, I'm just not sure. Maybe I'll just sit this election out, you know. But in a local election, that is where the difference is made. I think it was a matter of a handful of votes in the last round of the Elmbrook elections to determine those school board races. It really, really matters to be tuned into these local elections.
It really is the power of the individual and people that will stand up and step up. And Sarah, I know we talked to you a couple of weeks back about how when this is all done, you'll turn your attention to an assembly race. And again, wouldn't happen without people stepping up. But I got to ask, in a couple seconds left, Danielle, that sweatshirt, is that a Motherhood for Good sweatshirt? And does it really say Mother Voter on the front of it?
Mother Voter. You know it, Pat. If you go to motherhoodforgood.com, there's a merch link, and we've got some really great stuff up there, including one that says support local elections, which is a new favorite sweatshirt. Just a little shameless plug for our stuff. But awesome. Yes, be a mother voter and be an advocate for your community.
Danielle Scampini, Lynn, Sarah Harrison, thanks so much, ladies. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
Terry Bell's next. You're up north. Kick off another week, and a great way to do that is with Civic Media News Director Terry Bell to give you three things you need to know to get the week started off right and be on top of the news headlines. Terry, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. I'm excellent. I had a very nice weekend. How was yours?
Well, it was fine. In about 10 minutes, it's going to be a little less fine as I go try to move 10 inches of snow off the driveway.
You guys got socked pretty badly. Or you could just wait for it to melt.
Well, I was going to say, I'm not going to do it all. I'm just going to do the part that's definitely more than 10 inches is where the snowplow came in and did its business. So we're going to take care of at least some of it here. So, all right, looking at what is coming up throughout the week here, there was in international news, there was quite an event in Russia, and, you know, people, you know, pointing blame this way and that way. What can you tell us about this terrorist attack?
Well, what we know now is 137 people are dead, 4 people arrested.
And this is in Moscow?
In Moscow, sorry, yes, yep. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. At a rock concert, 4 people who had come from the border with Ukraine. They're members of something called ISIS-K. Which is a terrorist group that emerged back in 2014 or so in Afghanistan and in Pakistan. Its leaders had broken away from Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and declared loyalty to even the more violent extremist Islamic State, known as ISIS, of course, which was gaining influence at the time. So exactly what point they thought they were making or cause they were for is baffling to imagine right now, but it's just awful. 137 people dead that we know of.
Right. And again, people saying, well, wanting to right away point it at Ukraine and say, you know, Ukraine did this, and it may not be the case. It may be this other terror cell that is looking to take, shall we say, advantage of a situation. But unfortunately, if you know, Russia retaliates, it's probably the Ukrainian people that are going to pay the price for that. So it's, you know, just one of those things that we have to follow. I think many more people here in the States are following what's going to happen with the former president and his need to post a bond and whether he's going to be able to write out a very fat check today.
Yeah. So he was found culpable in a civilian court, in civil court, I should say, with his businesses defrauding a number of people. So he needs to pay $454 million at some point today in order to stay in compliance with the law. It's been playing out in news reports and on social media for weeks now, whether or not he has the money. His lawyers say he doesn't. The president on his own, former president, I should say, on his own social media channel, insists that he does. So we'll see exactly what happens today with that.
Well, he just is all the time sending these, you know, mixed signals. He's got, you know, Eric Trump was on TV yesterday saying it is physically impossible to have a bond that big. Physically, as if it's something that you lift, when there are very large bonds, and it doesn't have to come from one source. Although, like I said earlier in the show, I'm a little concerned that one of those sources may be a billionaire, you know, associated with TikTok, and I don't know that foreign money should really be involved in, you know, raising a bond for somebody with who's suspected of trying to overturn an election. This is going to get messy. This is gonna
and
get
might
messy.
Be president again in a right. few months. And what kind mm-hmm. of, you know, leverage such an individual would have over the president of the United States.
Right. So a point I've been making since he first came on the scene is we don't know his foreign debts. He's never been upfront about that. We don't know who his actions are really intended to help. Mm-hmm. And then finally, let's get even closer to home here and talk about the Wisconsin Policy Forum, a nonpartisan research group that does all kinds of various issues. And they are this time around taking on the housing. I think it's fair to say a housing crisis, both in supply and affordability, not just in Wisconsin, but all across the country. But what do their Wisconsin numbers indicate?
Well, it seems that home prices in Wisconsin are growing faster than incomes are, which is creating a problem, one, for affordability, and two, the whole market is just suffering from a lack of inventory. And it's tough to do much about that at this point. It's very expensive to build right now, and developers are concerned about getting their investment back. Interest rates are a bit higher than they were when a lot of people took out the mortgages they have now. And they might be considering, you'd think normally, and I'll just use an anecdotal example, you know, you'd think that this would be a good time in the seller's market to, you know, cash out and take the money and run. But you still need a place to live. Right. And you'll likely be ending up paying a higher interest rate than you're paying now. So for a lot of people, it just makes sense to stay put, which exacerbates the problem of, you know, people wanting to get into the market. But one, there just isn't inventory. And two, it's just not affordable due to interest and prices.
And when you look at things that could be done at the government level to try to encourage things, there's talk about, you know, tax credits that will help make homes more affordable, especially first-time homes more affordable. But like you just said, if they can't find something, you know, then what good is that tax credit? That's why I was very intrigued for the State of the Union that President Biden mentioned a tax credit as well for people who put their starter homes up for sale, who are ready to move to, you know, upgrade their housing. And maybe they too are thinking, well, but it's really expensive. But if you give them a tax credit, then maybe you kind of move the chain along. And I'm sure there's other ideas too, but this is going to take a little creativity to break this bottleneck.
It would seem to. Another problem, I live in Madison, where the problem here is, according to research, that people, older people, empty nesters are not downsizing at the mm-hmm. rates that they used to, and that's keeping new home, you know, first-time home buyers out of the market too. There isn't that turnover that we've seen for generations.
Yeah, I mean, and again, we had this marketplace that essentially had no mid-level housing. It was either McMansions, you know, or very high density, you know, townhouse developments and things like that. And you know, we're really paying a price for that. So again, whether it's at the federal level or at the state level, I know Governor Evers has talked about it. There's been bipartisan attention to the housing issue in the legislature, but clearly based on this Wisconsin Policy Forum report, there's more work that needs to be done. Civic Media News Director Terry Bell will be following all of this and more throughout the course of the week. Terry, thanks so much.
Thank you, Pat.
Have yourself a great day. Greg, you get a whole hour to nap, I believe.
I get 2 hours.
Metnair. Yeah, then it's time for Metnair on Air. And so catch Greg there as well, and he'll be back here at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning when we do this all over again for Up North News. Up North News is the Wisconsin digital outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. We've got a great guest coming up all throughout the next few days here. Kristen Lyerly will be back tomorrow to talk about the U.S. Supreme Court and the arguments they're hearing tomorrow about medication abortion, and her Women Win Wisconsin segment Thursday at 7:30. Have a great Monday. We'll see you tomorrow.